Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A co-presentation of WNYC Studios and Night Vale Presents.
You are listening to the Orbiting Human Circus of the Air.
As early morning settles on Paris, we bring you now to the janitor, who, perched high on the outer railings of the Eiffel Tower with his mop, looks very much like someone who's made up his mind.
I've made up my mind more than you'll ever know. I'm not going to try to go on the show anymore.
What? I'm speechless?
Well, come on, let's be honest. Every bad thing that's happened has happened because I wanted to be on the stage or because I wanted to be in front of the lights or on the microphone.
Of course. All your life you've dreamed of having an audience.
Yeah, but it's not real. It's okay, millions of people don't. And I'm not pretending I have an audience anymore either.
Brave words, considering especially he spent last night singing to that very imaginary audience to comfort himself. It's a melody that came to him one day, that he often hums to himself. And in his fantasy he sang with confidence and authority, and his song made his audience happy, which in turn made him happy. This power to make happiness intoxicated him until he fell into the deepest and sweetest of sleeps. So what happened to inspire such strange new resolutions? We take you now to the apartment of Chief Stagehand Letitia Saltier as she recounts the events following our recent hypnosis debacle to her downstairs neighbor.
If you are picturing a bad thing, just like make it 100 times worse. There goes the fire brigade to spray people to wake them up, you know, because what brings somebody out of an hypnotic state, it is water. You know, there's like 1,000 people in the audience. Plus, you know, me, plus Jean Cameron, plus Jacques, and, you know, everyone, all the animal. We were all just could not move. Like, you can see it happening. Like, there was a... this fireman is going to spray me in the face like with a fire hose, you know, like it's like I cannot stop it from happening, and then bang, it happened, and then you are like, I'm all wet, you know, and the whole theater is all wet because it was a whole audience. All the seats are ruined. They are going to have to reupholster the whole place. There's going to be repercussion, I think.
And repercussions there shall be. Episode 7 will begin after these words.
Welcome to Episode 7 of this special edition of the Orbiting Human Circus of the Air, with commentary following each episode and a director's cut of the season finale.
In the office of the president of the Perpetual Broadcasting Corporation, our host John Cameron is being addressed.
One cannot allow a janitor to ruin an international radio broadcast. It simply isn't done.
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
No, John, you really don't need to call me that. Call me President. The mister makes me feel so formal and stuffy.
Yes, President.
See, that's better. But really, John, the janitor must be done away with.
You want him killed?
This is not a joking matter, Mr. Cameron! John, if you only heard what they were saying at the club about our show.
But, sir...
Meredith was simply humiliated, and I had no place I could run to. They were listening to it in the dining room.
Sir.
In the card room.
Sir.
In the locker room.
Sir.
They were even speaking about it full-voiced in the library. I've never been so embarrassed in all my life. I drove off and even forgot about Meredith. I had to send Charles back with the car.
That must have been difficult.
It was horrible. John, You've brought us a stable of stars. You've made us the most popular show in the world.
Thank you, sir.
Which is why it would be so difficult to part with you.
Part with me?
If you cannot keep our show from devolving into utter chaos, if you cannot keep that janitor off the air...
Sir, why fire me? Why not fire the janitor?
Because he doesn't work for us, and you do. Besides, tower management is very difficult to reach. So many stairs.
I see.
But not to worry, John. The board has met and come upon a solution.
I can't wait to hear it.
We are going to chain a polar bear to your microphone podium to keep the janitor away.
What?
Effective immediately.
A polar bear?
A polar bear.
But, sir...
That's it. The decision has been made.
You
that's
can't
fine.
Expect
goodbye,
me...
Mr. Cameron!
Slamming the door behind him, John Cameron rushes out of the office...
Au revoir, Monsieur Cameron.
...and furiously makes his way into the elevator to the street. At that exact moment, a large crate marked Polar Bear arrives at the base of the Eiffel Tower. A clawing sound from within. Letitia approaches, pushing stagehands Jacques and Pierre away, and looks the crate over.
Hey, hello, what are you doing? This is a wild animal. Where's the trainer?
There isn't one.
This is a wild animal they want us to chain up to the microphone? No, no, this is why we have union. This is why they are rule. Don't you go near it.
But what are we going to do? We're going to leave it here? Like Letitia. We got people coming
in. Yeah,
I
know, so it's okay. I carry it up myself.
You're going to lift it yourself?
Yeah. I carry it up myself. I have Antrak.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Antrak. He's over there. Antrak. Oh. Handtrak.
Oh, Handtrak.
Yeah, that's what I say.
All right, got it.
Okay, nobody else goes near this thing. The beast does not leave the crate. That is an order. Mr. Cameron will be here any minute. You boys go ready the ballroom.
All right,
on my way.
Come on, Pierre.
But Mr. Cameron is already in the ballroom.
Which is why it'd be so difficult to part with. God, why do I have to deal with such idiots? Oh, God, I have a headache.
Gently massaging his temples, our host, John Cameron, walks directly to his dressing room, but as he reaches it, he pauses suddenly and gasps. In front of his dressing room door is a sealed cardboard box with Mr. Cameron crudely scrawled upon it in magic marker. Making sure that no one is looking, he clutches the package to his chest and ducks into his dressing room. Once inside, he exhales. Grabbing a penknife, he opens the box.
Don Giovanni!
Oh, my head!
He looks at the note.
Dear Mr. Cameron, I've found you another new act. It's an opera singing flea. I think he'll be a big star for you. Love, Anonymous.
Mr. Cameron crumples the note into a ball and throws it into his dressing room sink, lights a match, sets it on fire, and watches it burn. And suddenly, a knock at the door.
Yeah, I told you not to smoke. Oh, Monsieur Cameron.
Letitia, here's a new act for the show.
Ah, another one.
It's an operatic flea.
Oh, I don't know how you do it.
Me neither. Be careful not to open the top. Its singing is very loud.
He's a flea I can handle. You should see what else goes on around here.
And indeed he should. And indeed he shall. Because despite this telephone conversation...
Letitia.
Eh?
The president of the Perpetual Broadcasting Corporation is on the telephone for you.
At last. Hello. No, I've been trying to get a hold of you. I don't care if you are at the country club. No, I don't care if you are Christ himself come down on his rocket ship. The polar bear stays in the crate. Okay, alors, you take this thing away if you drive your golf cart to Rouen Paris to do it. Goodbye.
Yes, despite that telephone conversation, as John walks to the stage, there stands the polar bear, free from its crate, chained only to the microphone podium.
The polar bear? Who put it out there?
Jacques, Pierre, what did I tell you?
Wasn't us.
What? I've got to get out there. I don't know what to do.
There's no time. Go. Go.
No.
Broadcasting from the top of the Eiffel Tower, you are listening to the Orbiting Human Circus of the Air. Yes. See, it's difficult to get close to the microphone because they've chained a polar bear to it. He seems to be quieting down. Let me see if I can get... I'm going to stay very still. Yes, we'll start things off, ladies and gentlemen, with our brand new segment, Don't Try This at Home. Gifted contortionist Emisiel Edelweiss will balance 99 dishes on his nose, standing on the back of a cat, perched atop a large helium balloon, directly above 12 nuns standing dangerously close to the edge of a swimming pool. And here he goes. 96, 97, 98.
Luckily, the contortionist, being also an excellent swimmer, is able to rescue the drowning nuns and the cat. But with the polar bear free, dragging the chain attached to his collar behind him, bedlam! The studio audience tries to flee, but the polar bear bars their exit. He watches them flitting about like so many gazelles, selects the tastiest morsel, and strikes! Barely missing a businessman in a gabardine suit.
Ladies and gentlemen, please be calm. Play some music!
Attracted by the music, the polar bear turns toward the stage, to the orchestral itself, trapped in its cage like a music-making hors d'oeuvre. All over the world, innocent listeners listen terrified.
It's okay, darling. It's only make-believe. They're only pretending.
Meanwhile, at the tower...
Jacques, go to the left. Pierre, go to the right. You decoy the polar bear.
Decoy.
I will grab his chain.
Grab his chain.
Don't get too close.
Don't get too close.
Yes, Miss Saltier.
Give me the lock.
What lock?
The one I was locked up with.
There wasn't one.
No lock? Pendocres, it's here. Fiche, I am poisson rouge. Okay. Allez. I will grab this chain in my teeth if I have to.
Grab the chain in your teeth.
The polar bear hungrily reaches the orchestra's cage. John Cameron, exerting his authority as host, orders the polar bear to keep away. The polar bear obliges and begins stalking him, teeth bared, claws extended. John backs away, fearing the worst, until, emerging from an air conditioning duct beneath the stage, comes Julian, janitor at the Eiffel Tower, who walks right up to the polar bear.
Julian, stay back!
Getting dangerously close to the polar bear's sharp and powerfully swiping paws, Julian gets up on the tips of his toes and stares directly into the polar bear's eyes like some sort or just Svengali.
My God, what are you doing?
If you look deep into their eyes, they can smell what you're thinking.
Julian, get back.
It's okay, I know what I'm doing. My first boyfriend was a polar bear.
What?
Well, we weren't exactly boyfriends.
What are you talking about?
He used to impersonate a polar bear in an animal trainer's act.
Yes, as we in the business know, most big game trainers have a costumed shill mixed in with the real animals.
No one ever gets close enough to see it.
But what has this got to do with anything?
Well, the boy didn't like me, but the real polar bears did. They love me. Look. See? He's coming down.
Yes, he is.
He's moving away from the microphone for you.
Letitia sneaks behind the polar bear and takes the chain.
We have to find a way to lock him to something.
I have the lock here in my pocket.
You?
Yeah.
You? It was you.
I heard Jacques and Pierre say you were supposed to chain him up to the microphone stand. They were afraid, so I thought...
You brought him out?
Yeah.
And you put the lock in your pocket.
I needed to lock the polar bear up.
And the lock is still in your pocket.
Well, of course.
So you forgot to lock up the polar bear that was meant to be locked to the microphone so it might by chance keep you from ruining the show.
I didn't...
It's ruined! The audience has fled!
And indeed it has. There is no longer a soul left in the broadcast ballroom.
Don't yell, it's upsetting the polar bear.
I don't care anymore. It's all over. Feed me to the polar bear. I want him to eat me.
In a mad suicidal rage, host John Cameron throws himself at the polar bear.
Mr. Cameron, no!
Julian throws himself between the bear and Mr. Cameron.
John, get back!
Letitia slaps a full Nelson on host John Cameron.
Ha!
Wrestling his hysterical form to the floor as the bear runs off into the wings and disappears deep into the Eiffel Tower.
Jean, get a hold of yourselves! The show! Jean, the show! Look, we're on the air!
The show?
Look, Jean, there's a giant tape machine with a feature presentation on it! Push it on the stage and press play! We have to save the show!
We have to save the show.
A broken man, John tentatively approaches the tape machine and pushes it on stage without any idea that lying in a pool of his own blood is Julian, janitor at the Eiffel Tower, and he's really hurt.
What? Oh, mon Dieu. I did not see. We have to get him to the hospital. Now. Come on, Julien.
She lifts the janitor and, gently cradling him in her arms, dashes out the stage door toward the elevator.
Je call the hospital!
And in Letitia's arms, the janitor finds himself lifted and cradled for the first time since he was a child. Letitia, finding the elevator closed, makes for the stairs, carrying the janitor down them as quickly as she can. Looking up, the janitor notices that it is snowing. The snowflakes are gigantic. And the janitor feels as if he, too, were floating. Meanwhile, back in the broadcast ballroom, we find John Cameron standing at the microphone on the edge of collapse.
Ladies and gentlemen, Hope, I assure you that all is well. I feel that I'm about to faint, but that's fine. It's actually very fine. Now, what do we have for you now? We have, yes, of course, we have our feature presentation, and it's the moment you've all been waiting for. Yep. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to press the button now.
And with that, our host, John Cameron, does press the big button. The feature presentation plays...
So, you know those places on Park Avenue?
What's become of the janitor? I take you now to an ambulance, having left the Eiffel Tower several minutes ago. Inside, the janitor lies on a stretcher, clinging to consciousness and losing blood. The attending paramedic is surprised to find himself addressing his patient as if it were a small child.
All right, you be good. Maybe the great resuscitating platypus will come.
But the janitor is not listening. Clinging desperately to consciousness with the last bits of strength he has, he is listening to the radio playing in the cab, from which he hears playing his radio show and its feature presentation. And as he listens, all else falls away.
And she makes a Christmas for that kid like you would not believe. She makes a Christmas for that kid.
The janitor, straining to stay awake, hears music. John Cameron.
Well, that's it, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? I bet this is it. No one's here. There's nobody here applauding, but I can hear you applauding at home. I'm John Cameron, broadcasting from the top of the Eiffel Tower. The Orbiting Human Circus wishes you a good night.
The show's all right, the janitor thinks. Everything's all right. And with this, he passes out.
The Orbiting Human Circus of the Air is a co-presentation of WNYC Studios and Night Vale Presents. Welcome to this special commentary for Season 1 of The Orbiting Human Circus. If you are a new listener, we strongly recommend that you listen to the complete narrative season first, and then return to these commentaries.
I'd kind of come to a place in my own life where I think in some respects I was pretty close to where the janitor is. I'd ended up spending a lot of time kind of making these records obsessively. What ended up sort of happening was that I'd be alone, working on them for crazy amounts of hours. And then in a lot of ways, I'd sort of withdrawn. I was sort of living in places that had a lot of physical solitude as well, like really beautiful places, but places where there weren't a lot of other human beings close by, and they were more about solitude, and I was spending all this time trying to make these worlds and these records that I wanted to share with the world, but in a funny way, it was almost like keeping me away from the world because it was taking me so long to make them, and it was almost like getting to interact with the world was the reward at the end of it, but I couldn't seem to end it. I just felt like life was getting farther and farther away, and it was lonely. That period finally kind of broke. And we started performing live again, and I was making music with my bandmates, and Robbie Cucciero, who's, a very, very big part of the Orbiting Human Circus. He's live. He's the polar bear who plays the horn and tap dances. He's, all of the horn parts and a lot of the music that you hear. And Thomas Hughes joined up as well. Thomas Hughes is a massive part of what you're hearing in the Orbiting Human Circus. Thomas does all of the orchestrating, and he teaches the orchestral all of its parts and scores them for it. So all of the music on the Orbiting Human Circus of the Air radio show, the actual show where you're hearing all of that really distinct, big, swirling music, that's all Thomas's creation. And that was at the beginning of it, beginning to play live. And then finding myself in New York, and suddenly I had wanted to find a theater director, because a lot of the things that we were doing live, you know, I realized it's like, well, we're using a lot of the tools of theater, you know, we're telling stories and we have all kinds of things happening that are the same kinds of things that happen in plays. It's just we came to it backwards in our own way. But I thought it'd be so cool and kind of amazing to work with someone who was a part of that grand tradition, who knew all of the tricks of that you know, beautiful trade. And so I was sort of searching for someone, and I found this theater director named Ellie Heyman, who's this brilliant theater director who was really, really wanted to work with us. And so much of what you've heard came of that meeting, including my meeting Susanna Flood. You're about to hear Susanna, who I just mentioned. Susanna plays Letitia, and you're going to hear Drew Callender on the phone from Ireland. He plays the narrator. You're going to hear Dan Solomon, who plays Jacques. You're going to hear Christy Gressman, who's our producer. You're going to hear David Barlow, who's one of our resident men of 1,000 voices. He plays Mr. Trenard, and during the Macbeth sequence, he does about 6 different voices, both male and female. And you'll hear me with them, sometimes with the hiccups and sometimes without. Ellie is an amazing theater director,
yeah.
An amazing person. And without her, you know, none of this would have come together or happened. And she has an incredible energy for moving mountains,
yes.
And making things exist. One of the things that was so amazing for me was Ellie knew all of these amazing actors. She's a big part of the New York sort of downtown theater scene. And I had always worked with like one actor when mm-hmm. I'd worked with actors. I was either working with, I mean, I was very blessed because it was John Cameron. It was John.
Yeah.
Know, John Cameron
yeah,
Mitchell
really.
And Brian Duan. So it's like I've only played 2 violins and there were Stradivariuses, but it's... So I was very blessed, but I mean, I'd never
yeah.
worked with like an ensemble of actors
yeah.
before. And I remember when you first came over the first time.
It was a little bit of an audition at first.
Well, it was, you know, what was cool about it was we didn't do auditions actually.
Right.
So, because it was really like I was writing in real time. And what was amazing about the process that Ellie had kind of come up with, which was so cool, was I would write
mm-hmm.
and then she would bring in a group of actors to read. And I didn't even know what a reading was in those
yeah.
days, but folks would get together reading, and there's this
yeah.
whole theatrical concept of being
in her apartment.
In her apartment.
Yeah.
Or my apartment. But I would write stuff, and then I'd written this character, Letitia.
Yeah.
And so you Ellie had, I think, asked you kind of as a favor, really. It's interesting that you saw it as an addition.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of like, oh, she's asking all her actor friends as a favor to come read this stuff. And,
oh.
and I literally had just written the scene that
right.
you did. Like, I think I'd finished it the night before. And
right.
that was how we were going. It was like I would write and then actors would come and I'd sit there and listen to the actors. And then I would work on the writing,
uh-huh.
you know, because I'd listen uh-huh. to them speak. The process was that, like... Occasionally, yeah, I mean, when you'd hear certain people read certain things, you'd be like, I'd be like, can we ask them to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was...
I remember Ellie's apartment, too. That was extremely cozy with the...
We were at the kitchen table.
The whole yeah. apartment was a kitchen table,
yes.
really.
Yeah. there were 2 cats and a Roomba.
Oh. Yes.
The next thing I knew, we'd found this warehouse in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, you know, in this warehouse district. And it was like, it was this crazy, you know, warehouse building. And it was almost like being outside as much as it was being inside. And, you know, the heat didn't work. But it was just full of people and energy, our people, you know, and suddenly there I was with all these people, you know, we were making this thing happen.
David, do you remember Sunset Park?
I do. I remember... wanted to play all the bizarre and instruments that I'd never seen before.
The chimes
yeah,
were there.
Yeah, it was like the Willy Wonka of sound. I remember entering the space. It was like entering Julian's mind. It was like entering Julian's mind. It was a warehouse of Christmas decorations. There were like cutouts of like caroling elves and things like that, and like snowmen. It was kind of like being inside one of those Rankin and Bass Christmas specials, you know, the stop action thing, you know.
Cold.
It was colder inside than it was outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somehow. How did they manage that? Right. I was thinking how funny it would be if I didn't speak this entire time. But like how great that would be. You could just imagine me here.
What you would say.
You know what I mean?
Imagine your memories.
Right.
We're a spacious group.
We could do it another time where I don't come, but you guys pretend I'm here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, after you leave, what do you think we're going
to
do?
Hey, but we're not supposed to.
Oh, yeah.
That gives it away. I
heard your voice before I actually saw you.
Oh, really?
I was introduced to you. Yeah, because you had come in. I think I was in the corner in Sunset Park freezing my brains out rewriting some stuff, and recording sessions were actually happening, and Ellie was in there directing those scenes.
Yeah.
Because we would tag team.
Yeah.
And then I put on the headphones, so I first heard your voice through headphones, and I was just like, oh my God. You Your voice sounded amazing.
Oh,
it was so,
voice.
It was like, yeah, I know, because I was, and it was like, because I couldn't even, in the room, it was all echoey and stuff like that. But like when I heard what it sounded like, I threw the microphone through the headphones. I was like, holy cow.
So the other thing I really remember, the scene where we were all together, it was like everything was happening. The polar bear was running around. It's like me and Susanna and I think the stagehands. Do you remember this? And
yeah.
and it was, we wanted to get the rhythm of the scene. So, you know, instead of just doing it like the way you would do it normally on the radio, we were like, you know, where you would just have people, you know, even in separate parts of the country just recording into a booth. We were all doing it, you know, together, but the room wasn't big enough. Like the booth wasn't big enough to hold us. And also, it was a long scene, and, you know, we had to look at the lines, but the paper rustling from the lines would be a problem with the recording. So we had, like, all the pages were, like, taped to the wall, to, like, you know, different poles and parts of the wall, and we were all, like, and we had to choreograph, like, when you would step away from the mic and someone else would step into the mic. And it was awesome. That was one of my favorites. That was one of my favorite scenes.
That's especially beautiful. It's like when you're in a room, when you're working with several actors in the same space, and we're actually able to see each other, and just play off of the energy of what's happening in the moment. That's been really, really fun.
You know, do you miss me when I'm like, you know?
I don't miss you because I spend hundreds of hours editing you.
Oh,
when I'm not with you.
Right,
so I'm actually,
right.
Yeah,
I'm actually always with you.
The Orbiting Human Circus is written, created, and co-directed by Julian Koster. It was co-directed by and developed with Ellie Heyman and produced by Christy Gressman, with musical composition and arrangement by Thomas Hughes and songs by The Music Tapes. And editing by Grant Stewart, sound design by Eric Slider, with recording engineer Vincent Cascione and associate producer Robbie Cucciaro. Episode 7 featured Julian Koster, Drew Callender, John Cameron Mitchell, Susanna Flood, Dan Solomon, John Zorjeski, Meg Bashwinner, and Robbie Cucciaro. For full credits and to learn more about the Orbiting Human Circus, come visit us at orbitinghumancircus.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.